Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and I'm very excited today because I am on Zoom with Camilla Roman, who is in Norway. Hi, Camilla.
Hi.
All right, so Camilla made a wonderful film called Waves. It was an official selection at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021, which was just last year. And Waves won Outstanding Short Film Drama from our Filmmakers Board. And the Filmmakers Board, that's an award that's given by filmmakers who were in the festival previous years. And, you know, as good as our selection jury is, I think there's almost more impact that it comes from your peers, you know, people who are actively making films, saw yours and said, wow, that's outstanding work. So I'm doing a golf clap for your film Waves.
Thank you.
And amusingly, Camilla came out to Los Angeles because Waves was in the Marina Del Rey Film Festival. And I put it on my calendar and I was gonna go. And then I got COVID. So this is our second meeting on Zoom. We almost met in person because she was about 15 minutes away from where I live. But I was a responsible person and I didn't go to a movie theater. As someone who is testing positive for COVID, I think it would have been pretty awful of me to do that. Especially considering you were spending a week in LA and then going back to Norway. I certainly wouldn't want it to have been the obvious reason to expose you. So I hope it was a wonderful screening.
Yeah, thank you. It was the first time that I saw my film on a big screen, like a really big screen with, you know, the proper sound system. So that was really a great experience.
Yeah, and your film, I mean, something I probably told you. Oh, and for anyone who wants to know, right now, Camilla and I are going to talk about her history and what inspired her to become a filmmaker. And then we will talk about Waves. But if you want to hear a very Waves-centric conversation, we did record a Zoom Q&A last year when your film was in Sherman Oaks Film Festival. So people can always go to shermanoaksff.com. And it's really cool. At the top, it says festivals and it's a drop down and you can choose 2021. And then there's a link for all the Q&As and someone could actually watch a fresh conversation between us where all we talked about was your film and how good it is. And, you know, that's two options, but we're going to discuss it today too. But today, the nice thing about Discover Indie Film, I started this podcast so that filmmakers would get the opportunity to discuss their inspirations and their work. And I know, I think you actually are a productive creative. So tell me, how young were you when your creativity first started showing? Was it fairly young?
I guess I was about 9, something like that.
And were you writing or was it painting?
I was writing. We had these, you know, radio plays for kids. And part of that was like every week there was, you know, they will, you know, do a chapter and then the kids who were listening could write and then they would make a new chapter and they would so on. And then they will make a book out of it and publish it. And you get it sent, you know, to your house and you have your name on it. So actually I was a you know, published writer.
That's wonderful.
A child, you know, about 10 years old or something like that. But yeah, and there was also drawings and things like that. So yeah, I started to write early and I also was in like theater. So that was like my first, I was in the Christmas gospel, as that was called, you know, the Mary Jesus baby.
Yeah. I think we call them Christmas pageants, but
yes, exactly.
But either way, it's understood.
Yeah. So that was my first time on stage playing Mary. And I guess I got like hooked from that and like, oh my God, I really like being on stage. yeah.
So actually performing was an early, you were very interested in performing.
Yeah. And then I went more into dance and yeah. So I have done like a lot of things actually.
Oh, so yeah. So a lot of dance, writing.
Yeah. I actually made my first film when I was about 13. That was, and then I was doing it with a couple of friends of mine. And it's called The Revenge of the Vampire, where I was playing the vampire. Actually, I met one of my friends yesterday who did that with me. He was like still a friend of mine. And, and but I didn't really think about becoming a filmmaker until much, 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 much later.
But tell me about the, that sounds really fun. Was that, was that just with a video camera?
It was. And, you know, this was in the 90s. So,
yeah. But I mean, a bunch of creative kids just having fun with a video camera. That's
what we did. Yeah.
Yeah. And at 13, of course, a vampire movie would be.
Yes.
That sounds excellent. So, yeah. So then it wasn't till much later that you.
Yeah, because it was acting that was the thing that I really wanted to get into.
And was that something you pursued in school?
Yeah. Yes, it was. And I think I was 9 when I decided I wanted to become an actor. And I went to drama school in London. And then later I went to New York Film Academy in Los Angeles on the acting for film program.
Oh, right. So still focused on acting.
Yeah. Yeah. And being in Los Angeles was just wonderful. And unfortunately, I couldn't stay. I wasn't able to get a visa. Didn't have, you know, the credits that you need to get an artist's visa. And so I had to go back to Norway. And that was really difficult after being abroad for so long and coming into something very, very small and narrow-minded. It has definitely improved so much. But at the time, this was in 2005, coming back from Los Angeles.
Boy, it makes me angry about our visa programs. And here's a smart, young, ambitious person in Los Angeles wanting to contribute to our economy and our arts.
Yeah.
And we said, no, you can't stay. What a dumbass country sometimes. Boy.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Norway can be a dumbass country too. I have a friend who is American who's now dealing with the Norwegian system. So, you know.
They just aren't accepting that we're global citizens yet. Yeah.
No.
It is a shame, but right. I understand. When I tease my own country, I understand nowhere is perfect. Nowhere is perfect.
Nope.
Especially with immigration.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, we won't jump to waves, but here we are. I didn't realize that is very, is that revealing that you had an immigration experience and then your film is about a character having an experience?
No, because I mean, my experiences has nothing to do with the character in my film.
Yeah.
Coming from a country in conflict and not being able to, you know, speak your mind
So I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make a comparison between an asylum seeker.
No. And no, I understand that, of course.
And someone who is, I understand the difference, but it's still an interesting coincidence, I think.
Yeah, definitely. So that is what waves is about.
Well, when so let me try to do my podcaster job and act like when you were at so New York Film Academy in LA, still focused on acting, or is that when you started getting interested in directing?
Not really directing, but more into, I don't know, maybe like producing. Producing has not really been a passion of mine, but it has been, you know, if I'm going to get things done, I'm just going to have to do it myself. So I did produce a couple of short things, films that was at New York Film Academy, so that I could do the stuff that I wanted to in front of the camera. And then when I came back to Oslo, I did produce a couple of like a stage performance plays. And then I started writing, thinking, okay, I'm going to write my own stuff so that I can play it. And then I was writing my first short film with the intention of playing in it. And then, because I could see it so vividly, everything in my mind, I realized I have to direct this. And I got another actress to play in it. It's called...
Right. So you decided not to act and direct at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought, you know, at least for my first film, that I thought maybe that was a little bit too much to take on. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, obviously no criticism of anyone who acts in the thing they're producing, but it's certainly, I think it sounds like you had a healthy respect for the different disciplines in film.
Yeah. And it was also, you know, I thought it's not going to be as good if I'm going to do all of it. I need to.
Yeah. Yeah. And as an actor, obviously you had many years of acting. Am I wrong to assume that you care so much about your performance that you don't want to perform in a situation where you're distracted by all the, because producing is what keeping your eyes on 1,000 details at once.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, now I'm like getting ready to do both at the same time. But starting out, I thought it was best not to have, I mean, I already had a lot of roles anyway, you know, producing, writing, and a lot of other stuff too, you know. So I prefer to have someone else coming in and doing it. But I definitely feel that being an actor makes me a director that is very good at working with actors.
For sure. So the first short, how long ago was that?
It premiered at Golden State Film Festival in Hollywood in 2019.
Okay. Right. Yes. Before the world shut down.
Yes, a year, yeah. Almost a year before.
Yeah, in 2019.
Yeah, yeah, a little less than that, because I was in March, yeah. Mm.
So. And did you enjoy the experience?
Oh, absolutely. I was really, like, overwhelmed with being selected and coming over there and being, you know, part of, like, oh, my God, I'm a filmmaker now, and these people are, like, see me as one. And it also won Best Foreign Language Short. So that was my first award, and that really, if that hadn't happened, I don't know if I would have made other films. I'm not sure, because, you know, you need some validation as well to keep going.
Yeah. Although also, and you obviously enjoyed the process of making the film.
Mm-hmm.
It was, how different was it? Was that the first time? Oh, you directed some stage plays?
No.
No, so that was the first directing?
I produced a play. It's called Danny and the Deep Blue Sea by John Patrick Shanley. Probably a lot of people know that play. And I produced it and I translated it to Norwegian. But then I was on stage. So I got a different person to direct it. And I had directed like amateur theater for several years, but it's, you know, very different doing that on stage than directing professional actors on screen.
Yeah, because you're controlling that, there's a camera, the camera changes everything.
But having a lot of experience in front of the camera definitely was, and I've learned so much on being on set myself as an actor, knowing what works, what doesn't work, when am I happy as an actor on set and when am I not happy? And I really took all that into account when I was doing my own films.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was a great experience. And I assume that's what inspired you. Did Waves come next, or was there something else in between?
I did a little short film in between, like a 4-minute film that we only shot in one day. It's about equality. It's about the two men who think they're very different and then realize that they are quite similar. It's about prejudice, but it's very like humorous. It's a little comedy. Yeah. So also like a little comment on like our society and yeah.
Yeah. So but you definitely see the arts as a platform for important topics. Like, you don't just seek to entertain, you seek to make a point.
Yeah. I guess so.
I mean, it's a compliment. I don't mean any offense to the filmmakers and the writers and the creative people who just want to entertain. But I think I think you can entertain and make a point at the same time. And I think it makes it better.
Yeah. But actually, as an actor, most of the roles that I get are more like comedy. And that's also a universe I really love, and that my films have not really gone in that direction. I don't know. It's just, I don't know why. But it's like you get an idea, and that is something that is important that you want to say something about, and then for some reason that didn't turn into comedy.
Well, I imagine, yeah. I mean, when you sit down to write, I don't know if you sit down, if you just wait for an idea to come and then you sit down to write, or if you're, you know, some writers sit down and they say, I'm going to write something every day, or they just say, I'm going to write and whatever comes out, comes out. But yeah, it's, we rarely choose.
Yeah.
Yeah, because if you force yourself in a direction, so you can give yourself an assignment, but obviously what comes naturally, you should just listen to.
Yeah, then, and that's the way I work too. You know, there is an idea and then you're like thinking about it even more and then more and more. And you're like, God, I have to do something about this.
Right, you get stuck with the idea and you're like, damn it, now I have to do something about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, it demands big chunks of your life.
Yeah.
I understand. And so the comedy, but was it fun making that comedy?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a little different the way that that film happened, because there is this group here in Oslo called Purple Dragons, and they do from time to time they have these Saturday workshops where pretty much really, you know, anyone can actually come. You don't have to be a filmmaker or anything that has to do with it, but of course, you know, you have to be interested in film to come to these workshops, and you are giving a topic and then divided into groups. And I was directing this one, and we were giving the topic equality, and then it's like, now you have half a day, do something. So it's improvised, and it's we shot it, and it turned out pretty well, and we thought, okay, well, maybe we can do it like proper with, you know, the proper sound and, you know, make it look better, and that's what we did. And I just tweaked it a little bit, you know, to emphasize a few things, make it a little bit more punchy, and then we reshot it. So that's how that film came about.
And that's really nice to hear. I know I am a big fan of the films that people take a little more time to make better, because I know a lot of people just figure, oh, we'll just shoot something and we'll put it out in the world. And that's fine. But yeah, when you look at it and say, okay, I can do it better, I can improve the technical side, and of course you do some rewrites. I think I've read, or I spoke to someone recently, and it took them so long to get their film made, and they kept rewriting it for over the year, you know, the couple of years it took them to get it made, that they're like, oh, the script I had after a year or two of trying to raise the money for it was 100 times better than the script that they started with.
Mm-hmm.
So that one was good. And did you hit the festival circuit with it?
Yeah, we did a little bit, not too many festivals with that. But we did have a few screenings here in Oslo with that film. Yeah.
And at that point, I'll just be silly and say, like, at that point, did you say, okay, I am a filmmaker. Like, I'm my focus. Have you remained an actor and filmmaker the whole way through?
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So always acting.
Yeah.
And I imagine Oslo's just like Los Angeles. There's auditions. There's this, there's that, there's the usual acting chase.
It is very different. It's, you know, so much smaller. It's not an industry here, but of course it is a business, and there is, you know, some people are very much in demand and some people are not so much in demand. And you don't have like hundreds or even thousands of people that you're competing with. You are usually, maybe there are like five other people going in for that role. So.
and it sounds like that could foster a community.
Yeah.
Maybe more so than here. Here, I think there's little pockets, but yeah, here it's kind of cutthroat.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, my experience is you know, being on you know, a couple of festivals only, where I really have felt like a sense of community. But of course, I don't know how it is really to work in Los Angeles.
Yeah, because it was mostly NYFA, New York Film Academy.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's good. So then Waves, the idea for Waves came to you after the comedy?
Yeah.
And so what inspired that?
So what inspired that was, we have a lot of people like who are like asylum seekers or refugees or people who have come to seek a better life and have stayed in Norway for a long time. And then suddenly someone maybe find like years after that there is a mistake or a fault or something isn't adding up or whatever in their papers or, you know, new information or something. And they decide that you have to leave. I know you've been here for 10 years or even longer. I know you have kids here. Doesn't matter, you have to leave. And myself and, you know, for me, it feels like the majority of people are, you know, disagreeing with this practice. And, you know, these people are usually, you know, they're working, they're paying taxes, they're part of a community. And then because they've made a mistake or something I felt that I wanted to say something about that. And some of these cases have been in the media, but of course, a lot of them haven't, because you need like a very strong community around you and someone who really, you know, advocates for you for it to actually be in the media. So some people are just, you know, being picked up and, you know, sent back.
Yeah, and sent back to an unsafe place.
Yeah, very often, yeah, or a place where they have never, because, you know, even if your kids are maybe born here, you have to take your kids with you. I mean, you can't let your kids stay. So, you know, so even if they are citizens, if your parents are not, then they have going back to countries where they have never been and they don't know the language and things like that. Some of them don't even get to go to school in the country they are, you know, for example, if they have to go back to Afghanistan or someplace like that, you know. So it's I think it's a terrible practice. And but what was intriguing to me about this that had never heard anyone talking about it was how is it for the police officers who have to do the job of actually physically taking them from where they're living, you know, their home, or sometimes there it's an institution, and putting them on a plane and sending them up, you know. And that was like really the inspiration to the film.
Right. So the inspiration was thinking about and the problem itself of rejecting someone's status as an asylum seeker. And then also the people who have to enforce these laws. Yeah. I love your empathy because I know a lot of, one of my best friends since I was 15, 16, he's a Los Angeles Police Department lieutenant now. He worked his way up through it and he actually became an accountant first and then wasn't happy. And one of those college graduates who became a cop and people demonize law enforcement, but those are people and those people may not always agree with what they have to do on the job.
Exactly. And I mean, I believe that most people who decide to be a police officer probably want to help the community, be of service of some kind. And I believe that this kind of service is not what they were after when they got into this kind of job.
For sure, for sure. And that just that came to you, or did you read something about police officers?
No, absolutely not. And that was also the thing, what I had never heard anyone talking about this or yeah.
Yeah. But that and was then in the film, obviously you create a situation where even if someone had been, I guess I'll use the term anti-immigrant. Normally you're only anti-immigrant because you haven't met someone. And your film creates a personal experience between two people where even if he wasn't sympathetic to her story, once he hears her story, it would completely change that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably. I guess that's one of the things that makes Waves such a rewarding film to watch is there's so many levels. You're actually, there's just so much going on in that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's what it is. Mostly it's the conversation between these two people in an apartment. And I started to write the script before COVID and things weren't really falling into place. I didn't make, you know, it didn't kind of make sense. Sense to have, and I was also, you know, doing it on a workshop. We were a couple of other writer directors on it, and we were like, you know, reading each other's scripts and giving feedback. And there was like, it's kind of weird that this guy's coming into her home and that she invites him in, and then COVID came, and with all the isolation and not seeing people at all, it made it. It just fell into place that someone can, because he's a delivery guy, you know, he's no longer a police officer. And he turns he starts to deliver groceries and she gets them delivered. And then there is an impulse for her to invite him in, which is definitely not a Norwegian thing at all. I guess maybe in other cultures that would be natural to do, but in Norway, people would think that, okay, what's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? Just don't invite the delivery guy in.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, but of course, she's not Norwegian. And
yeah.
Lord knows a lot of cultures, anyone at your door gets offered tea.
Exactly. So, but also it is, you know, people really understand the thing about that you want human contact when you have been so many weeks. And this was in May 2020, so it still was quite early on. But this was, you know, the part where everyone was just had to stay at home. And so for someone who had been so isolated for so many weeks to invite someone in, it's like people will get it. All right. It makes sense.
Right. So that's very interesting that you're the narrative of the story you're telling did change for the better because, and of course, needless to say, an immigrant in a new society does feel isolated. But obviously COVID isolation, lockdown was a whole different level of isolation.
Yeah. And also actually that people who were supposed to be sent out had to wait longer because there were no like airplanes and, you know, things like that. So you were just waiting and had no idea when this would happen.
That's true, boy. It'll be years and years of remembering that there was a time when we grounded all the planes and we didn't go outside, and people would get deliveries and they would wipe them off with their, bring them in and wipe them off.
Yeah.
Such a strange thing we all went through just a year and a half ago. Less.
Yeah, it seemed like long, in a way, it seemed like a long time ago, sort of.
Yeah, we've been, in quotes, normal. We got our normal lives back sometime last year, I think, after the vaccinations were spread through enough. But it is nice that it was not your intention, I assume, but the film Waves is also a bit of a time capsule of that era.
Yeah.
So you worked through that writing workshop of sorts. And then how soon after making the policeman a delivery guy did you shoot?
I guess that was only maybe about a month, but I had already actually cast my actors and I had already have like most of my crew in place. I produced this film with someone else too. So him and I were already, you know, had decided that we were gonna do this film together.
And did you know the actors before or?
A little bit. I didn't know them well, just a little bit. But when I was writing the script, they just came to my, you know, mind. I just started seeing them, you know. I was like, okay, I'm going to ask if they're interested. And they both were. And also because of the lockdown, nobody had worked in, you know, 2 months or something like that. So everyone were like really eager to do something. And obviously we had to be a very, very small crew to be able to do it. But I really like actually to work in small crews. Like sometimes when I've been on set myself as an actor and it's so big and you don't even know who is doing what and what's their name. And, you know, it's just like, who am I going to ask about this, you know? So sometimes that can be a little confusing.
Yeah, and it becomes a less personal, less intimate thing, obviously.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, you know, you do meet filmmakers with huge egos who like they're like, I can't wait for the day that I have a 100-person crew. But the truth is, they have no idea how distracted they're going to be by having that many departments and that many people coming at them all the time.
Yeah. Actually, I watched the Werner Herzog masterclass just before I shot my first short film. And he also, he was talking about how he works in very small crews, and that several people are, you know, doing several, doing different roles on set. And I mean, I took a lot of stuff actually from him that he was saying, and, you know, I was like, okay, that sounds really smart. I'm gonna implement that and that. You know, learning from the best.
Yeah, well, and the voice of experience, right? He's been doing it for such a long time. He knows what he's talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And obviously you're drawn to his kind of filmmaking.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very interesting. I haven't seen all his film. I've only seen a few, but I think it's, yeah, I mean, he's doing things his own way, definitely.
Yeah, and doing things that are a little more emphasis on the original and the unique.
Yeah.
And Lord knows, not to, again, I'm not insulting the big crews, but a small collaborative crew, you know, whether it's three people or seven, or, you know, under 20, whatever someone considers small, you can move faster. You can adapt more quickly and keep everyone on board.
Yeah. And it makes communication, you know, a lot easier, I think.
For sure. In your film, I mean, I'll say I only have gotten to see Waves, but I mean, it also looks beautiful. The camera, and, you know, I don't know if you just use natural light or not, but it the film looks fantastic. I think I even joked with you in the Q&A how much I love that her home just looks so warm and inviting and beautiful.
It's
actually a very cinematic home.
About that, we I got to screen Waves for the first time yesterday in Norway.
What are the odds? Wow.
Yes. So they have this event, it's called Green Screen, every 2 months, and you submit and they pick three short films, and there is a panel and there's Q&A's and there's an audience, and I got to screen Waves, and the panel, there was this film photographer who's done, you know, lots of stuff here in Norway, and you know, he was also like commenting on the photography. So, and was like asking, you know, about the, how we had planned all that. And, you know, to be honest, it was not that planned. It was, a lot of it was, you know, pure luck, I guess. And just trying things and being, you know, in communication with my photographer. And he would say, what if we tried this? I think this might work. And I said, yeah, let's try that. And also the how we got that apartment with that beautiful wall, and it was also, yeah, I mean, sometimes you get lucky.
Yeah, but also you were making smart decisions as yourself and your co-producer. You know, obviously, I assume you looked at more than one location, and when you saw something that you thought would look good, you chose it.
That was the only location we looked at because my co-producer said, I have a friend that has a really nice little apartment, and I'll ask him, you know, if we can come and shoot there. And we went to see it, and I was like, this is perfect. I mean, I couldn't have written this in my script. So we just went for it. So yeah, I mean, that was great.
That is great. That was the
only location we saw.
Well, and I say this too often, but as someone who sees, you know, 1,500 indie films a year through the two festivals, my goodness, locations are so important. When the locations are poorly chosen, or people just figure, I have no budget, so I'll just shoot in a blank room, or with a room with no personality and nothing visually interesting, they're really asking a lot of the viewer. They're asking for a lot of forgiveness.
Absolutely. Actually, the first film that I made, it's called Love You to Death. by the way. And that's shot in a gallery. And we didn't know what exhibition would be on when we were shooting. And it turned out that the pictures that are in the actual film did really help to tell the story. And we had no idea that would happen.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
But also, our galleries are wonderfully cinematic. So that was a good instinct to place it there.
Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff, you don't see it while you're shooting. You see it when you're editing. And you're like, oh my God, this is totally matching. And this is like, you know, it's matching the for example, the emotions of the character or...
Wonderful. Wonderful. And you, and was Waves, you said the other film was a 1 day shoot. So I guess Waves was longer.
My first film was a 3 day shoot. Then it was a 1 day shoot. And then Waves also was a 3 day shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. So 3 days. Yeah. And actually it's quite, I think it's what, 15, 16 minutes.
Yeah. 16 minutes. Yeah.
And I have to say, and I consider this a very high compliment. In my mind, it's much shorter because you get so taken away by the story and the conversation that you're engrossed in it. And then it ends and you have no idea how long you've been watching. Right. Like that's, yeah. I think we've all had that experience where a 90 minute film that we go see feels long. Mm. And a 2.5 hour film feels brief because the level of engagement, how interested you are in the film.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And I would say Waves is one of those where when it finishes, you haven't even noticed the time passing.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
And good edit, good everything.
Yeah, it's just so important to just pick the right people, the people that you feel are, you know, that really gets what you're trying to say and understand the universe. And
you had a great experience with everyone who collaborated on this film.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's wonderful. And so you shot it so early in COVID. Were you thinking, like the rest of us, you know, COVID will be over before the end of the year, and we'll be able to, you know, because so how were you when you finished it? Did you wait a while to see if the world would go back to normal before you started putting it out there?
No. What happened was, of course, that a lot of festivals went, you know, online. So we started, you know, submitting it. And it has been in a few festivals. Some festivals that weren't online, I couldn't go because of our first, live festival was in Italy, and this was in December, and it was, you know, then was the new, is it going to be a lockdown, what is going on, and I just couldn't take the chance on going to Italy. And then we had another one that was early this spring that was in Prague that I didn't go to either. And then so the first time I actually got to see it was, in LA, Marina del Rey in June.
Yeah, June of 2022.
Mm, yeah. So the other festivals had been online that we've been on.
And so you got very used to hopping onto Zoom and doing
it. Yeah, well, not everyone has, you know, this amazing Q&A on Zoom that you're doing, you know. So most of them don't really have anything like that.
Really? Wow. That's so, I guess that is, I may have heard that, but yeah, if they're not having screenings and they're not doing virtual Q&As, well, I guess they didn't have to do much work for those online festivals. They just they're good for them. They saved a lot of time.
Yeah.
As, I know that's just me teasing other when I hear about the festivals that we you couldn't obviously fly out for it, but we even with Sherman Oaks Film Festival in 2021, we had a socially distanced mixer outdoors where it's so funny to think of now, but even in November of last year, November 2021, everyone wore masks to talk to each other outdoors because we were still, there was still, was it 2021? No, 2021, we got back in the theater. Well, I'm all wrong. Oh, yeah. It was 2020 that we had the masks outside.
Yeah.
See, it's all a blur.
Yes.
And are you always continuing to write more?
Yes, I have three projects that I am developing. One I worked on since 2016. It's a feature, and it got pretty far. I got to pitch it for one of the biggest producers in Norway that was interested, and then they decided not to do it, and it just didn't happen, you know. So that's when I decided also to do my first short film, because I was like, okay, I need to do something that I can do myself, that I don't need a big producer to with a lot of money. so that is still something that I would really like to have happen. I'm thinking about doing into a mini series. And then I have another couple of things, an American feature that I'm working on, also maybe a TV series. And I also have a Norwegian TV show that I'm working on. So I have things, and I'm pitching, and I'm writing, and I'm,
It sounds, I can't help but obviously your time in London, in Los Angeles, is why you're multilingual. So, you know, so is there a unique challenge to that? Like when you're starting something, do you have to decide, okay, what language is better for this?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And the first feature film that I wrote, the one I just told you about, because I have like a full script of that, but I was in a screenwriting program, a European screenwriting program with that film. And so everything had to be in English. So I wrote the script in English, and then I translated it into Norwegian. So it's in both languages. And I was thinking, oh, you know, it's going to be easy to translate it. I'll just, you know, it's almost like writing the movie again.
Actually, right, because you have to make the intricacies of language are so complex that you are rewriting, literally, not just translating, but to translate it correctly, you have to be creative.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which is something I can understand in theory, but of course, I have horrible Spanish skills now, and and I long to I have what a tourist learns of French and Italian. And that's it. So I can't actually imagine just how hard it is to have things come out right. But I do know that it is. Actually, I always, from people who are multilingual, I always hear how if they read the subtitles of a film, they say, oh, the subtitles are so wrong.
Yeah. Just
because they get the meaning wrong. It might be an accurate translation.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes they do it very well, and you're equally surprised. You're like, oh my God, they really, really did a good job on this one. It's not just automatic, because, you know, sometimes they are automatic and they don't make really much sense.
And is the decision which language to write in, whether it's a program or not, is it also, like, do you write differently? Like, do you think about an American-British audience if you're using English, and you think about a Norwegian audience?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause as a global, you are a genuine global citizen. So you certainly have your feet in both in multiple cultures.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I, my husband is French also. So yeah.
Well, that's even, do you, and what does that mean? You speak good French?
No, not good at all.
Which is very funny.
It's hard to learn French, really hard.
It is. Yeah. It is. But I wish I could.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And still I don't, because I'm too lazy to really, you know, do the work.
Yeah, it takes immersion, right? You'd have to
absolutely.
You'd have to say, all right, honey, we're gonna spend 6 months in a small village outside of Paris, and yeah. I'm not going to speak Norwegian or English for 6 months. And I'll,
yeah.
And in the first month, you'll sound like a child. And in the sixth month, you'll sound like an adult.
Yeah.
And even then, it's hard to hold on to if you don't use it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that's funny. That's very cool that you, well, you could always task him with translating something into French for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you had, so it's, this is exciting. So you have a couple things going, and then still with the acting, you're not talking up your acting too much, but are you able to keep busy with it in Oslo?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, of course it is. It's not something that unfortunately I'm doing, you know, continuously, but that's also, you know, one of the reasons that I got into filmmaking is to keep myself busy and being creative and doing my own projects, because as an actor, it's so frustrating when you're not working. It's just frustrating. The times that you're just waiting and you're hoping to get, you know, an audition, you don't even get the audition sometimes. And it's you know, you're always like, I felt sometimes, you know, you're just like, hire me, please, you know. You get sometimes, you know, desperate to. And that has just relaxed me so much by doing my own projects. And it's also, you know, when you have this, what are you working on now? And that you can actually say that you are working on something and not having to kind of, I don't have anything at the moment.
And I assume based on what you said previously about, you know, you weren't ready to act and produce at the same time, but are you ready now?
Yeah. Yes, I am. So the projects that I am working on now, the three projects that I talked to you about, my plan is to both direct and play in it. So that's what I'm hoping. I will be able to do.
Yeah, I confess after our conversations and and seeing your work, I would love to see you act. I would love to see, especially comedy. I think it would be fun to see you in comedy.
Yeah, well, actually, my next project is not a comedy. I'm doing an international feature film where it's actually my first like big part in the future, and that's going to be shot in England in probably in November or December.
No, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. So that's going to be exciting. So
interesting. So wow, you have that's great. I mean, obviously my geography is good enough. I know how close England and Norway actually are. It's not,
yeah, yes, it's very close. It's like, you know, it's 2 hours on a plane.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like going from LA to, well, actually it's even closer than, it's like going from LA to Salt Lake City or LA to Portland. It's nothing. Yeah. And that's exciting that you, so, and when you're auditioning and things, you're in touch with the London or you're in the film community in England, or do you have representation there? Or?
Actually, not yet. It's also something that I'm working on. I'm not working on, but I am going to work on now that I'm shooting a film there. Like, okay, now I have to get some representation there as well. So I haven't really been that much. But this film is shot in England. It's the director is Italian. So I don't know. By coincidence, it is also fun to be able to actually go back because I went to drama school in London, and now coming back like almost 20 years later to do a film finally. Because of course, that's what I got into a drama school in the first place, was to do exactly that.
That's wonderful. And now I understand that. I understand a little better what internet. It's, you called it an international film. If there's.
Yeah.
An Italian director,
yeah.
And actors from all over, including yeah. Scandinavia and Norway, and then it's yeah. being shot in London. Yeah, so it's just yeah. We yeah. use the term melting pot over here. It's like a melting mm-hmm. pot of cultures,
yeah,
combining into a work of art. That's
mm-hmm.
everything should be like that.
Mm-hmm.
I assume there's no way the film would have a tunnel vision point of view where it must be a very broad, interesting project.
Hmm.
I'd assume.
Yeah, I assume too.
You'll find out. That's just in a couple months. I know when I'm in the theater again for Sherman Oaks Film Festival, you'll be shooting a film in London. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I can't beg you to come out to LA for Sherman Oaks Film Festival, but maybe next year.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to add before we?
No, I think we covered, you know, a lot of stuff really.
yeah, for sure. Yeah. One thing, and I have these little notes.
Yeah.
Along the side of the screen. And I didn't mention when I introduced you, because I was talking about your awards and things, that Waves will be in the Discover Indie Film TV series next season.
Yes.
Actually, by the time this podcast comes out, it should be after September 15th when season 6 comes out. And Waves, for people who want to see it, there might be another way. I don't know if it's on your website or if you've made it available. But people who want to see it can go to season 7 of the Discover Indie Film TV series on Amazon Prime, which is in the USA and the UK for now.
Yeah.
Amazon decides what markets, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm very, very proud to have it included. That's exciting. It's you know what it is about. And maybe people listening know, but I'll just quickly say that Discover Indie Film is a series where it's just the best films on the film festival circuit. All the shorts get put together into 10 episode seasons where each episode is 2 or 3 films, and you just, it's like going to a film festival without leaving home. Everything's good too. I don't know if you've got that experience of going to festivals and seeing your wonderful work paired with stuff and you go, why is that here?
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you see sometimes stuff that is just like really great, and then you see stuff that is not so great.
It is. And there's always differences in taste, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I always get very, I don't know what to think of it when I look at the lineup at another LA-based festival and I go, oh, there's like 5 films there that I really didn't think were good at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
But someone might love them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I finally mentioned that Waves will be in season 7 of Discover Indie Film. Is there a website or Instagram you want people to look at or follow?
You can definitely, if you go on CamillaRoman.com, you will find the link to my Instagram, and you can also, of course, find me directly on Instagram, but that will be easier. and there is some information about my work and my films and their links, and yeah.
Great. Well, I will, in the show notes for this episode, I'll put CamillaRoman.com with a link so people can just, if you're listening to this podcast on a smartphone app or whatever, or I think most people use their phones, but it is on the web too, but there will be links and you can just click on it and it'll take people to CamillaRoman.com.
Excellent.
All right. And I will name the other websites. But first, I'm supposed to beg for people to be kind. Like and subscribe to the podcast. Give it a nice review if you enjoyed listening to this. If you didn't enjoy it, just go away. Don't write a bad review. And if you want to learn more about this TV series or the podcast that gave birth to the TV series, just go to discoverindiefilm.com. And on social media, it's at DIFWINS. And Camilla and I talked about her film Waves that was at the Sherman Oaks Film Festival. We hold that every November. And you can learn more at ShermanOaksFF.com. And it's at ShermanOaksFF on social media. And there is a sister festival we hold every June called Film Invasion Los Angeles. And you can learn about that if you go to FilmInvasionLA.com. And it's at Film Invasion on social media. And I'm pronouncing it to me oddly, but I there was one filmmaker based in New York, and when I said Film Invasion, she said, "Did you say evasion?" And I was like, no, we're not evading film. It's an invasion of film, of indie film into Los Angeles. So filminvasionla.com. Thank you, Camilla.
Thank you, Jeff.
And for those who are really eager, we're going to stop recording now. And thank everyone for listening. But then we're going to start recording again just so Camilla can answer the 4 questions and we'll find out her favorite films and things like that. So it'll just be talking about other films, not Camilla's work. So thank you again, Camilla.
Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening.